Okay, good evening. Welcome back. I'm sorry that we had a little bit of a hiatus over here. We have at least one more that we can cram in before Purim. If you got a source sheet over there, it's definitely a halacha topic, but it's not like we're talking about anything very specific in terms of do's and don'ts on the Purim day itself, but maybe a basic halacha that gets overlooked, maybe correctly so, we'll see soon, that sheds some light on the overall spirit of the mitzvot hayom of Purim and informs the way we're supposed to perform the mitzvah that takes up a large chunk of our day, which is the mitzvah of Sudas Purim. So if you look in source number one, you have the, it's not really so telling the source, but you have a source in Shulchan Aruch, it's in Tafresh Sadihei, where the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah together, again, they're put together over here in different orders, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah record and also discuss, we cut out a lot of it, they also discuss the halacha that a person has to engage in Sudas Purim during the daytime on Purim. That's important that it's not at night, but rather during the day. The Ramah does have over here that it's nice to add a little bit of simcha at night, maybe do something a little special. But the mitzvah, the real halacha, that you have to have a Sudas Purim, you have to have a meal for Simchas Purim, that's a halacha of the daytime that has to take place during the day, not at night. And if you look in Sif Beis, we have the recorded practice, Chai Benish Lebesume Bebraya Ad Layada Ben Ar Haman Lebarach Mordechai. That part of the... And this, we'll say it this way very simply, it's not as simple as I'm saying it now, but it is true that this mitzvah of Chayiv Inish Levesume B'Puraya, that a person has to become intoxicated on Purim, that's in the context of the Suda. Meaning the Suda is something which is supposed to take place on Purim, and in the context of the Suda, a person is supposed to drink wine to the point that they are intoxicated. Those aren't separate details, those are combined. Here in the Halacha, that part of the Suda involves wine, and involves Chayiv Inish Levesume B'Puraya Ad Lo Yad Bin Ar Haman Lebaruch Mordechai. Fine. That's the Shulchan Aruch. Here, on this section of Shulchan Aruch, so the Prima Gadim has a comment. We didn't quote it from the Prima Gadim, but we put it in source number two from the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is quoting the Prima Gadim. He suggests a seemingly, I don't know, pretty innocuous possibility. It's not such a jarring thing that he says over here. The Prima Gadim says it's quite possible that in order to be Mekayim, in order to be Yotzei, to fulfill the mitzvah of Sudas Purim, that a person wants to fulfill the mitzvah, that they have them have a meal on Purim, so it's possible that, I'll say that even better, in order to fulfill the mitzvos hayom, Sudas Purim, Mishloach, Manos, Matanos, Lavyonim, all three of those things, not only Mikra Megillah, all three of those things, in all those cases, a person must have Kavana Latzes, which means a person has to have intent. They have to be intending, have kavana, that they want to be yotzei the mitzvah, meaning they can't do the mitzvah haphazardly. They have to have it specifically in mind, intend, that they're performing the mitzvah. Look in source number two in the bold. V'ayim b'prima gadim shekasav, de'inyan su'udas purim, u'matanos levyonim, u'mishloach manos, efshar ditzarech kavana al zeh l'shem mitzvah. That maybe you need kavana to do the mitzvah, to be properly in fulfillment of the mitzvah, of su'udas purim, of mishloach manos, and matanos levyonim. Now, is that a problematic line by the prima gadim? Ostensibly not, right? Meaning when you do mitzvahs, you're supposed to have in mind that you're doing mitzvahs. That's not a big deal, correct? Anyone have an issue with it? I'm sorry? Meaning maybe it's impossible to have intent. Okay, so you'll do the Mishloach Manos in the morning, you'll do the Matanos Levyonim in the morning, and the Suda itself involves, the Kavana leading up to the point where a person is drunk, but, we'll assume that you can get it done at some point before. So avoiding any technicalities. Are there any fundamental problems over here? No. It seems like a normal case, right? A mitzvah gets a Kavana. What's wrong with that? So in order to actually understand why the Prima Gadim really is making a fundamental, maybe even novel, maybe a chiddush over here suggestion, so we need to backtrack a little bit. We need to give an overview of this concept of mitzvos having kavana, and then we can circle back to our halacha of interest over here from source number two. So generally speaking, there's a klal, there's a rule, a yisod, a principle in halacha of mitzvos tzrichos kavana or mitzvos enon tzrichos kavana. It's a sugya in many places in Shas, which basically is a discussion amongst the Tanaim, Amoraim, Rishonim, and Achronim all throughout history as to whether when a person performs a mitzvah in general, not only in the mitzvah of Purim, in general mitzvos, does a person have to have intent, have to have a kavanah in order to be yotzei the mitzvah, or can a person simply do a mitzvah, and even if they're not thinking particularly about the intent to be mekayim mitzvah, they'll still be yotzei. For example, the Mishnah Maseches Pesachim Alav Kuf Yudal at the end of Maseches Pesachim in Perek Arvei Pesachim, so the Mishnah tells us that we eat a vegetable that qualifies as maror twice by the Seder. We eat it twice during the night. You remember that from the nighttime. So the Gemara there on Amud Beis quotes Reish Lakish, who says that the Mishnah is assuming mitzvos tzrichos kavana. When performing the mitzvah, a person has to have in mind, they have to intend that they're being mekayim the mitzvah. If you make a hadama on the initial vegetable and you eat the maror, so we're worried that you don't have the mitzvah in mind. You're hungry, you're making a hadama, it's a berachas hananin, and so you're just eating because you want to eat. You haven't eaten all day, and now it's finally time to eat, so you have a little bit of the vegetable. So because of that, says Reish Lakish, we have you do it a second time. We have you take the maror a second time to make sure you're proving that you're doing it for maror, and you're doing it with having in mind to the mitzvah of maror, and the Gemara pins this on the machlokas, mitzvos tzrichos kavana, or mitzvos einon tzrichos kavana. If mitzvos tzrichos kavana, you need intent to be in fulfillment of a mitzvah, so then you got to do it again to make sure that when you do the mitzvah, you actually have in mind you're doing the mitzvah, not just eating the tasty vegetable at that point. However, if you hold mitzvos einon tzrichos kavana, you don't need kavana to become mitzvah. As long as you do the action, that's good enough. That's all that's demanded of us, is to do the action, so then you don't need to have the maror twice. Once would certainly be sufficient. That's what the Gemara there assumes the machlokas is dependent on, and this comes up again in the Gemara in Brachos and Gimel, Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chav Ches. It's all over the place that the Tanaim, the Amoraim, debate this concept of mitzvos tzrichos kavana. When it comes to the Rishonim, so there is a machlokas Rishonim as well. Rabbeinu Haigon and Lampa more on one side, the Rif and most of the Rishonim on the other side assume mitzvos tzrichos kavana, and that is what you have in source number 3 from the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch quotes it, V'yesh Omrim, She'ein mitzvos tzrichos kavana. There are those who assume that mitzvos are not tzrichos kavana. You don't need intent in order to fulfill a mitzvah. V'yesh Omrim, She'tzrichos kavana. And yet, there are some who say that you do need kavana, latzei spasiyas osa mitzvah v'chein halacha. So the Shulchan Aruch says, I'm not going to leave any ambiguity here. He makes it clear for us that he thinks the halacha accords with the opinion which assumes that in order to be mekayim, in order to fulfill a mitzvah, a person has to have kavana when they're doing the mitzvah. So when you do a mitzvah, you have to have in mind, I'm shaking a lulav in order to do the mitzvah of a lulav, not because I'm just doing my yoga with my lulav stick. No, this is what I'm supposed to be doing as a mitzvah. Kavana latzei says ha mitzvah. The Mishnah Brura, I think it's there in Siman Samech, although I didn't put it on the page. I'm sorry about that. The Magen Avram and the Mishnah Brura quotes it, quote the Radvaz, earlier poskim, who assume that maybe there's a split between Daraisa and Darabanan. Then when it comes to a biblical mitzvah, Daraisa, there you definitely have to have kavana. It's more intense, it's more extreme, and you need to have intent in order to be mekayim the mitzvah. But if it's a mitzvah Darabanan, of rabbinic in nature, so maybe in those cases we're a little bit more lax in terms of the kavana. But either way, the general rule is that when a person is doing a mitzvah, they should be intending to have kavana to be yotzei the mitzvah. The Daraisa Darabanan thing is interesting. It's also important because which one is Kriyas HaMegillah? Which one is Mishloach Manos, Matanos Lavionim? Sudas Purim, huh? Darabanan is one option, or something sort of in between. Because it's not Daraisa, it's not in the Torah, that's correct. It might be Darabanan like you said, but it might be something called Divrei Kabbalah, which is something in between, which is Divrei Nevi'im, meaning it appears in Megillas Esther. Right? It appears in a text, it just happens not to be a Torah text, it's a Nevi'im Ksuvim text. So that might even be a higher level. So it's somewhere like in between. It kind of falls in this gray area. So that's an interesting thing to think about, whether how that applies in this particular instance. But again, we're assuming like the Shulchan Aruch that ideally a person is supposed to have kavana when they're doing mitzvos. Two important points the Rishonim make. This is quoted in the Rabbeinu Yonah, the Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachos Navav, about the halacha of mitzvos tzrichos kavana. First of all, Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah say that everyone agrees that mitzvos tzrichos kavana lechatchila. Nobody thinks people should do mitzvos with their head off. That's not the way to perform mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are supposed to be done with kavana. By kavana, we don't mean kavanas. We don't mean like Arizal's kavanas of the Shem Hashem. We mean thinking that I'm doing the mitzvah of the Borei Olam when I shake this lulav, when I eat this matzah, etc. Everyone agrees you have to ideally have kavana. The debate is a case of b'dieved. If you didn't have kavana, were you yotzei your mitzvah? One says yes and one says no. One says you were not yotzei and you have to, do it again, right? I mean, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. That's the machlokas over here, whether b'dieved you were yotzei in a less than ideal fashion, but ideally everyone agrees that a person should certainly have kavana. That's first of all. Second of all, and this is really important, Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah quote from Rabbeinu Shmuel, a Rishon, one of the Baalei Tosfos, who says that even those who hold mitzvos einan tzrichos kavana, meaning that you don't need intent to fulfill a mitzvah, even if you did a mitzvah with your head off and you weren't paying attention, you weren't intending to be yotzei the mitzvah, you still would be a yotzei. That's only true by mitzvos which involve an action, which involve a maisa. However, everyone agrees when you have mitzvos shebedibor, meaning tefillah, or brachos, kavana is certainly part of a mitzvah. Why does that make sense? Because words without kavana are empty shells. Words are just the vehicle by which we deliver intent, which we deliver a meaning. If you have no intent, absent intent, speech is that empty shell. It's just the vehicle with no passengers. There's nothing in it. So when we talk about mitzvah shrichas kavanah or in shrichas kavanah, we're talking about kavanah b'tfilah. A person has to have kavanah and tefillah in order to daven. Okay, there are details. If a person didn't have proper kavanah, what's proper kavanah? Do you repeat? Do you not repeat? There are details in terms of repeating and not repeating, but we're not talking about that when we talk about mitzvahs tzrichos kavanah. We're talking about actions of mitzvos. Do they demand that we have kavanah when we do them? And that's a machlokas rishonim. And again, the Shulchan Aruch says, ideally, certainly we're supposed to try to have mitzvos tzrichos kavanah for sure on daraisas, maybe even on derabanan. Fine. Now, there does seem to be some deviation. You'll see in source 4 in a second. There does seem to be some deviation from this general rule of mitzvos tzrichos kavanah. It's not as cut and dry and clear as we had said until now. The Ran notes famously a seeming, I guess, contradiction in the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Shofar in Perek Beis writes very clearly that if a person is blowing shofar for his friend, so you need to have both kavanas hamashmiya and kavanas hashomeya. They need to both have kavana. The person who's blowing the shofar and the person who's listening to the shofar both need to be intending. I need to intend to listen. You need to intend to be motzimi. We need to both be intending to do and receive the mitzvah of shofar. So that implies certainly mitzvos tzrichos kavana, right? You need to have kavana in order to fulfill the mitzvah. That's obvious. However, look in source number 4. Here in source number 4, the Rambam is talking about the achilas matzah, the mitzvah of eating matzah on the Seder night, and it's in Hilchos Chametz Matzah. The Rambam says, achal matzah below kavana, a person eats matzah without intent. Okay, we're clearly talking about our sugya, right? A person eats matzah without thinking, they're not intending it. Kigon shansu gayim olistim. Like a normal case where a guy breaks into your house and shoves matzah down your throat on the Seder night, just happens to be. So that's his form of a joke, so he shoves down your throat. But you weren't intending to eat the matzah, but it happens to be, you ate matzah. So I didn't intend to do so. Yotze dechavaso, says the Rambam, even so, you were yotze, the mitzvah of achilas matzah. So mitzvah tzrichas kavanah or mitzvah einan tzrichas kavanah? Einan tzrichas kavanah, right? Mitzvahs don't need kavanah. Meaning, even though I didn't have kavanah, I still was yotze, says the Rambam, the mitzvah of achilas matzah. So this Rambam, I'm sorry?
This is an action.
This is an action of eating, for sure, yeah.
So maybe it's different, thinking about something.
Again, you think it's always kavana is always thinking.
Right.
It's accompanying an action.
Doing something instead of also thinking about it. I mean, words are you're saying them, but
right.
Words,
but so let's use our two examples though. Before we get back to Purim. I think Purim is all actions, but before we get back to Purim, our two cases in front of us right now. One was in Hilchos Shofar, and one was in Hilchos Matzah. Both of those are actions, correct? Meaning blowing shofar. Or listening to shofar, whatever, is an action of blowing or listening, right? Making the sound or listening to the sound. And eating matzah is an act of eating matzah. In the first case, the Rambam says, you absolutely need kavanah. If a person doesn't have kavanah to be yotzei shofar, he won't be yotzei shofar. If a person does have kavanah, he will be yotzei. In the case of achilas matzah, the Rambam says, even if you didn't have kavanah at all, black and white says that clearly, there's no arguing here, even if you didn't have any thought to be yotzei the mitzvah, you are yotzei the mitzvah of matzah, even though it was forced down your throat. So I understand, do you need kavanah or do you not need kavanah? In those two cases, they're both actions. And the question is the thought that accompanied that action. So isn't that a stira? Isn't that a contradiction between the two Rambams? This is an old question. This is the Ran's question. The Magad Mishnah quotes it on the Rambam. They do offer an answer, but I think we need a little bit of background. There are multiple levels. When we talk about Maisa, when we talk about action in Halacha, so there are really multiple levels of Maisa, which exists within Averos. The truth is, we'll see soon, the same is true about mitzvos. But within Averos, there are different levels of action. So most famously, Avera b'mezid. Mezid means intentional. So a person says, I don't care about Shabbos, and they break Shabbos. That's an Avera b'mezid, on purpose, with full knowledge, with full intent. They know the fact that this is prohibited, and they still violate the halacha. Okay. The second level of action is shogeg, which is accidental. Someone does something accidentally. Still, it's still a form of action, which is why, you know, we're starting Parshas Vayikra this week, Sefer Vayikra. So the Ramban has an important, famous point about this. But we know that most of the karbanos that we talk about in Sefer Vayikra, we think of it as doing averos and then getting atonement by bringing karbanos. Most of the time, we're talking about an avera b'shogeg. You did an avera by accident. You flipped on the light switch because you forgot it was Shabbos, or you forgot that you're not allowed to flip on the light switch. You bring a karban. If you did it on purpose, you wouldn't bring a karban. You'd be killed, right? So this the halachos of shogeg. It's still an action. It's still something you did, but it's something which was out with full intent to perform the act, without full knowledge of the consequence or without full knowledge of the context in which you perform that act. So there's mezid, there's shogeg, and then there's onus. Onus means something which is completely forced. Again, somebody breaks into our home and shoves matzah down our throat. We were forced, through external or internal, in some cases, circumstances, to do a certain action. So those are three levels of maisa, correct? There is a fourth. Anyone know? There's a level called misasik. Misasik basically is defined as doing something, the best way to say it is absent-mindedly. Literally without full awareness of the metzias, of the reality within which a person is operating. So, I don't know, Tosfos and Maseches Shabbos and Daf Ayin Beis have a few famous examples of this, but one case says as follows. Let's say you see a carrot on Shabbos lying on the floor, and you intend to pick it off the ground thinking it's detached. So it's just a carrot on the floor, it's not attached to the ground. You pick it up, and you realize afterwards that it had been attached and you plucked it out. So you did the Melach of Kotzer, you plucked a carrot out of the ground. So, in that case, was that an Isser D'Oraisa? So, again, was it Mazid? No, you didn't do it on purpose of Melacha. Was it even Shogeg? No, meaning I knew it was Shabbos, I knew you're not allowed to do Kotzer on Shabbos. What was it? It wasn't onus, nobody forced me to do it. It was a case where I just didn't know. I wasn't working with a full deck over here. I didn't know the Metzias. I didn't know the reality in front of me. I thought this carrot was detached. So I pulled it off, but I didn't know it was coming out of the ground. I thought it was picking up from the ground. That's called misasik. I don't know, a person leans against the wall on Shabbos, doesn't know there's a light switch there and the light goes on. That's not mazid. It's not shogeg. It's not onus. It's misasik. I was scratching my back on the wall. It happens to be there's a light switch. No one told me. I had no idea. And it turned on the light. Those are cases of absent-minded, completely not knowing what's going on. If a person does something that's misasik, they're totally devoid of responsibility. There's no culpability for such an action. There's lamdis in terms of how to say it. Is it that they did the action but they're putter, or they didn't even do an action? But the point is, it's not related to them. It's not considered a maisa avera, so to speak. And it's the lowest level of maisa in terms of the spectrum that we listed before, this case of misasik. However, the Gemara increases on Daf Yud Tes, says there's an exception to this rule. What if a person is, sounds like a gross case, mostly because it is a gross case, they're swishing around saliva in their mouth. And the saliva is juicy and it's gross. And it tastes fatty and yummy. And they swallow it. And they realize afterwards, oh my gosh, that wasn't saliva, that was chelev, which I wasn't allowed to swallow. Okay, yeah, it's a weird case. I don't know how these things happened back then, but something like that happened. They thought it was saliva and they swallowed some liquidy fats that are not kosher. So in that case, are they chayev? So you would have said, logically and correctly, that this is a case of misasik. Meaning the person had no clue what the metzias was. They thought they were swishing around, a mouthwash, and it turns out it was pig wash. I don't know, hog wash. That's a thing, right? So it turns out it was something treif. They weren't allowed to be doing that, but they had no idea. They were working without the full understanding of what was going on inside of their mouth. They had no clue what it was, and they swallowed it. So is that a problem? I would have said a misasik ba'alma. Says the Gemara. Usually that's true. However, when it comes to chlavim and arayos, isurim that are tasty, isurim that give a benefit to the person who indulges in those isurim, then even if I was misasik, even if I wasn't fully aware, even if I was absent-minded in performing that maisa, I still am held accountable for what I did. So in the case of chelev, where it tasted good, I got a geshmak, I got hana, I got benefit from swallowing the chelev, so since the action was done and I benefited from it, that benefit ties the action back to myself, and therefore, even though generally speaking that would have been a case of absent-minded misasik, since it was a case of eating and enjoying, I get attached that maisa, and I'm held accountable for having eaten the chelev. That's what the Gemara says. Pretty unbelievable, correct? Okay. Was that so far so clear? There's generally an idea that there's levels of maisa. The lowest level is misasik. Misasik means I'm here and what I did is over here. I'm totally detached from my actions. However, when it's a type of an isser where I get a lot of enjoyment from it, like eating that chelev, like swallowing that fatty isser in my mouth, even though I did it without knowing what was going on, since I enjoyed it, my action and the results are tied back together, and therefore misasik shekein nehena, since I enjoyed it, I am held accountable for what I did. Good? Says the Ran, that's true in the realm of Yisurim. That's a Gemara in Krisos. That's true in the realm of Yisurim. Says the Ran, I think that's also true in the realm of Mitzvos. Says the Ran, I think that the case is that really the rule is Mitzvos Tzrichos Kavana. How do I know that? Because the Rambam told me that when it comes to Shofar, if I want to hear the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, I need to have in mind that I want to be Yotze the Mitzvah Shofar. And the person who's blowing the Shofar needs to have in mind that they want to be Motzi me in the Mitzvah Shofar. Mitzvos Tzrichos Kavana. That's the rule. That's the rule. What about achilas matzah? When it comes to Seder night, if somebody barges into my house and forces matzah down my throat, I am yotzei the mitzvah, even though I didn't have a kavana. By shofar, I have to have a kavana. By matzah, I don't. What does that mean? Answer, says the Ran, yes. You know why they're different? It's not an exception to the rule. It's a different case. In fact, says the Ran, and this is Madiak and Rashi in Shas, in the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, says the Ran, when it comes to a mitzvah of achila, what happens when you eat it? You get a little bit of a geshmak, you get a little bit of a benefit, a little bit of enjoyment. Okay, different people enjoy matzah different amounts. But the point is, there's a satiation, there's an enjoyment, especially after not eating all day. There's some level of hana. So generally speaking, if I would do a mitzvah without intent, it would be like mesasek. It would be like, I was just doing it absentmindedly. And therefore, I can't be yotzei the mitzvah. I can't be mekayim a mitzvah if my head is off, if I'm not thinking. The action doesn't attach to me. It doesn't relate to me. I haven't really performed the mitzvah. But if it's a mitzvah of achila, if it's achilas matzah, then even if it was forced down my throat, even if a nachri came in and shoved down my throat, and I didn't have in mind to be yotzei the mitzvah matzah, but since I enjoyed the matzah, shekein nehene, since I enjoyed the matzah, so it's attached to me again, I got the hana from the eating, and the hana turns this back into a ma'asa mitzvah, into an act of a mitzvah, and therefore I could be yotzei the mitzvah of achilas matzah, even though mitzvos yeh tzrichos kavana. So again, the rule is mitzvos tzrichos kavana, you need to have intent. When it comes to shofar, you have the intent. If you don't, you won't be yotzei. When it comes to matzah, it's not that you don't need the intent, it's that we assume you do have the intent. Because if you enjoyed it, that's considered like you intended to do it. It attaches, it recalibrates, it refocuses what you're doing, and makes it a ma'isa mitzvah with intent through your benefit, through your hana, from the achila of the matzah, from the eating of the matzah that was shoved down your throat. Does that make sense so far? That's the basic idea, yeah.
So
misasik
can work for...
In both directions, exactly, exactly.
And then, can I ask a question that you probably are going to get to?
You could try.
Okay. If, like, let's say you actively are going to show absent-mindedly heading to shul and listening to Megillah, so isn't that kavana enough? Like, you don't have to necessarily be thinking while you're hearing the Megillah being read, I'm now
Mekayim Mitzvah. Yes. Yeah. So we're not actually not going to get to it, but this is, it's important what you're saying on two levels. First of all, is you obviously don't have to think of the entire time you're sitting. I assume you don't have to think of the entire time you're doing that. Like, you kind of contextualize what you're doing at some point. So if you're going and you're, you know, thinking in your mind that I'm doing the mitzvah, or I don't know, just when they make the bracha, never mind the walking to shul, when they make the bracha, you have it in mind. So that proves for the rest of the night that's what you're doing, the rest of the day that's what you're doing. So that's first of all, for sure true. Second of all, and this is something the Chai Adam quotes, we're not going to have time to get into this, but this is important. I think the Chai Adam says it, I'm trying to remember now in the exact context, but maybe Kriya Shema, maybe also Lulav, I'm not sure. But let's say a person's standing in shul, and they're laying in Kriya Shema. Or they're standing in shul, and it's by halal and sukkahs, and they're taking lulav. And they afterwards they say, I give out geshrigan, I didn't have in mind to do the mitzvah of lulav. I didn't have in mind to say kriya shema that it was the mitzvah. So we say, oh, mitzvah tzrichos kavana, you didn't have kavana?
Like,
you're in shul. You're in shul. Shul proves. Right. You didn't come to shul to shake a lulav for your yoga class. You came to shul to shake a lulav because of the mitzvah of the day. Right, so sometimes the context even proves it. Never mind your case, which is a very good case. I intend, I'm walking there with that in mind. Even once I get there and I'm just in the context of shul, it's a mitzvah context. It proves what I'm trying to do. So there certainly is room to determine what a person's doing based on that. But we're making up a case where a person didn't have anything in mind at all and was absent-minded. So then that's the case that we're talking about. Okay.
So I think
yeah.
That's actually, I'm glad Talia and you both said this. Like, it's to me, actually, that's what the case for the Rambam seemed like. It wasn't...
In the case of matzah?
It's a nice idea, this thing about, like, the, you know, getting hana or not, but, like, it just seems like this person has matzah in their house, is in their house,
right,
on a Seder night. Like, there was kavana to have a Seder and have matzah.
Right.
It must be somebody came in and shoved matzah down their throat before they had the
right
ability, but, like, they were, yeah, will walking to shul.
Right, I hear what you're saying. It doesn't sound like that's what the Rambam is referring to. What you're saying is independently true, so I'm not arguing. It doesn't sound like that's what the Rambam is referring to because he's saying, achla matzah below kavana. His answer is not, you know, really you were in the Seder and it just came in early. But what you're saying is independently true. Like I'm saying from the Chai Adam, there is such a concept. Yeah, yeah.
So does it extend to eating? So it should extend to any type of eating?
It could, yeah. So what would you have in mind? Anything or just saying?
No, I'm just saying that case that, you know, saying that it's not necessarily that they chose it, that he was satiated, but if he is,
yeah,
if that extends to eating all the time, then it is that he was satiated because
yeah, yeah.
Anytime you eat, you don't eat.
Correct. The way we're saying it, it would extend to all the different cases of food. Correct. Absolutely. Which is why we're talking about it, because we started by talking about, we were talking about three mitzvahs, but one in particular, the mitzvah of Sudas Purim, that there's a mitzvah to eat on Purim, a Suda, a meal. It involves basar, meat, it involves wine, it involves getting drunk, all those things are true, but there's ultimately a mitzvah of eating a meal, correct? And what did the Prima Gadim tell us? The Prima Gadim had a suffix, and we said it wasn't such a, we thought it was innocuous, but now we're starting to see maybe it's not so obvious. The Prima Gadim said, hey, maybe you have to have kavana. Mitzvah strichos kavana. A person has to have kavana when they do a mitzvah. And when you, when you're performing the mitzvah of Sudas Purim, it should be no different. It's a mitzvah derabanan, it's a mitzvah divrei Kabbalah, but it's a mitzvah nonetheless, and therefore, a person should have to have intent. So maybe a person has to have intent when they're eating the Suda of Purim. However, the Achronim point out in this Prima Gadim, whoa, not so fast. What kind of mitzvah is this Sudas Purim? It's a mitzvah of achila, of eating, of hana, of enjoying. So maybe as long as the food is good, which is usually the case, or if you're a few drinks in, eventually it's going to taste good enough. That has been my experience. If the food is good enough, you're eating Suda's Purim. You're eating it. You're chewing it. You're swallowing it. You're enjoying it. Shekei nene. So what do you mean, kavana? Who needs kavana? I'm eating. It's like it's no worse than someone forcing matzah down my throat, right? It's a case of eating. And if it's a case of eating, shekei nene, we don't have the issue of misasik. We don't have the issue of misos tirchus kavana, because the kavana is always built in. So what is the prima gadam talking about then? If the Prima Gadam is saying it's possible that you need kavana, what do you need kavana for? You're eating. You're doing the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the eating. If you're performing that mitzvah, why would you possibly need kavana, le'ikuva, that you can't fulfill a mitzvah without intending to do the mitzvah of Suda's Purim? So in order to answer that question, I think the route to answering that question is to maybe rethink a little bit. It's an important perspective to have, to rethink a little bit the mitzvah of Suda's Purim. And I think if we do that, it'll help us also understand all the mitzvahs Hayom as one unit together. We began earlier by mentioning the Shulchan Aruch in source number one, and the Ramah, their discussion of the dinim of the Suda of Purim. We noted that Suda's Purim stands out from all the other Yom Tovim in the din of Chayiv Inish Levesume, Bipurai Ad Loyada, Bin Arur Haman Baruch Mordechai, I gotta get it right. That drunkenness, intoxication, those things to an extreme, that's different than most cases of Yantiv, all cases of Yantiv. However, in source number five, you have another highlighted difference by the Rambam. The Rambam says, Ketzad Chobas Suda Zo. What is the obligation of the Suda, of the meal of Purim? Sheyocha basar. You have to eat meat. V'yisakin Suda na kifiyah she'tim tayado. And you have to make sure you make it a beautiful Suda. V'shosa yayin achi yishtaka v'yuradim b'shechurus. And you have to drink a lot of wine. Okay, so that's the things we saw before. What the Rambam here says is that there is a mitzvah, apparently, aside from the shear of drinking until drunkenness, which is what we focused on, there is a mitzvah on Purim that a person must eat basar and must drink wine. Now, these are long discussions in Hilchos Yantiv, but it's not absolutely clear that a person has to eat meat on Yantiv. It's one form of Simchas Yantiv, but a person has to eat what they enjoy on Yantiv in order to enjoy themselves. But apparently on Purim, the actual food of meat and the actual drink of wine need to be consumed. They are themselves almost like, think of it like a Chefza Shel Mitzvah. You must eat that and you must drink that. It's not only about what you enjoy and what you like the most. It's actually foods that are required to be eaten and drinks that are required to be drunk and drink. I never can get that. It never works. It ruins the flow every time. What do you say? Drink, drunk, drink, drinked. So there's actually a certain type of food and actually a certain type of drink. You have to consume, there you go. You have to consume those things. That's a requirement on Purim. Based on that, you look in source number 6. The Aruch HaShulchan Paskins, he's quoting the Rambam. He says, "Umashma de basar vaday tzarech debel adei zeh in chashivus." Meaning a person has to have meat on Purim. It's not an option to say, I like something else more. It's not an option to say, I'd rather have dairy. You have to have meat and wine on Purim, apparently. What's the problem? Huh? So you don't have to keep Shabbos anymore either. I mean, you're out. You're totally out of the whole religion is done for you. So Purim is different in that both meat and wine are necessary. And the wine, again, goes to the extent that it goes. So, okay, fine. So we see another difference. What does that mean? Where does that come from? Why is that even true? That meat and wine are so specifically necessary. So there's a beautiful sefer. I actually brought it with me here. It's called the Or Avram, of Avram Gurvitz. So he quotes, he has a lot of svarim, he's a prolific author. So he quotes from the Abu Drum, who explains that the extreme stress on wine on Purim is actually founded in the Psukim. He notes, and if you look in source number 7, I tried myself to gather a few examples of this, but he notes that many of the main nisim and occurrences with which we're familiar that took place during the context of the Megillah story, many of them took place over wine or in the course of elaborate meals. Achashverosh summons Vashti during Ketov Lev HaMelech B'Yayin, right? The Esther is appointed as a replacement after a Mishtei Gadol. In the second source here, in source number 7, Vayas Hamelach Mishta Gadol L'chol Sara Ba'avada Ve'is Mishta Esther. The downfall of Haman was during a Mishta that Esther made with wine, with Yayin. I tried to bold for you the cases over here of Yayin and Mishta, but basically you see again and again that the context, and in some cases even the cause of the salvation that took place in the, and by the way, and also the negatives of the Purim story, all took place surrounding real festive meals, including Basar the Yayin. So the Abu Dram says very brilliantly that since we see in the Megillah, in Megillah's Esther, that throughout the story, we're constantly confronting wine and meat, and we're seeing meals of great extravagance that are taking place in the story of Purim. So says the Abu Dram, the way to commemorate the Nes, the way to remember and to live out Nasim and Nizkarim, the way that Nizkarim and Nasim, that we have to remind ourselves and commemorate the story of Purim, is through acting out the story. Our way of recollecting through reliving the story of Purim is by drinking wine and eating meat, meaning we're trying to relive the story. We're trying to act out the story of Purim. It's very interesting. Rav Moshe Sternbach has a comment in his Sefer Ma'adim Mizmanim where he writes that, generally speaking, if a person, like you said before, on Yontif or something, they don't enjoy wine or they don't enjoy meat, so then it's a different set of rules for them. When it comes to Purim, based on what we're suggesting over here, even if you don't enjoy wine at all, I personally don't enjoy wine at all, I don't like wine, but if a person doesn't enjoy wine at all, it's disgusting to them, even so, there is an Indian, there's an idea to drink the wine over here, because it's part of the, it's like the Chafetz Shel Mitzvah. You're acting out the Purim play. The Purim play involves wine. You have to have, even if you don't like the taste or the effect, maybe you don't have to drink as much as other people at the Suda do or whatever. Drink one that you like a little bit more. But the point is that the wine is inherently valuable to the Suda, not only because of its intoxicating factor, but also because it is the context in which the story of Purim happened. And that's what we're trying to accomplish within the Suda, the context of the Suda of Purim on the day of Purim. Based on that, Rav Gurvitz in this Or Avram explains that the mitzvah of Suda and the mitzvah of Yayin, the wine, on Purim, they're not just a mitzvah of Simcha like we have by all other Yom Tovim. Now you're starting to see the point over here. By all the Yom Tovim, the point is to be happy, to rejoice. So what you like the best is what you should use to rejoice, but that's not what's going on over here. The case of Suda's Purim is a case of Pirsumei Nisa, where we're trying to relive, understand, remember, commemorate, and act out the story of Purim, the Nes of Purim, and publicize that Nes of Purim. It doesn't follow the guidelines of Simchas Yom Tov, but rather Simchas Purim is something which is supposed to be a reenactment of the Purim story to some degree. A hodah al anes, a thankfulness for the miracle, a praising of Hashem for His incredible kindness through the acting out of the nes of Purim. And so wine is demanded and basar is demanded because that was part of the story. Going back to our Prima Gadim, the Prima Gadim said that when it comes to this mitzvah of Sudas Purim, So maybe you need kavana. So we said, okay, that makes sense because mitzvah tzrichas kavana. But then I said, wait a second, it doesn't make so much sense. Why? Because mitzvah tzrichas kavana is true. You need to have intent always when you do an action. But when you're eating something, you don't need intent because eating gives you the intent. Enjoying the food gives you the intent, like matzah, like by Yisurim with the chelev, right? When you eat something and you enjoy it, that fills in the intent for you and you no longer have to have mentally in your mind the intent to be mekayim the mitzvah. So we said by Suda's Purim, it's a case of achil, it's a case of eating. So why do you need, according to Prima Gadim, maybe intent, kavana, to be yosei the mitzvah? You're eating, it's a meal. What's the answer? The mitzvah of Purim, of Suda's Purim, is not eating a meal. It's not enjoying the food. It's not having simcha through enjoying basar, through enjoying wine. The mitzvah of Simchas Purim in Suda's Purim is to live out the story of the Nes of Purim. It's Mefarsim the Nes, it's Pirsume Nisa. It's tied to the story of the Megillah, acting out, reliving it, recollecting it, remembering it, acting it out. All those things are involved in the mitzvah of Sudas Purim. It's not simply a mitzvah zachila, but rather it's a mitzvah of das. It's a mitzvah of something which you're acting out, which you're playing out, which you're supposed to remember. Certainly, you could imagine, it's possible, that a person needs to have proper intent to be yotzei that mitzvah. If it was just about eating, you're right. If you enjoy it, you're good to go. But if it's about more than eating, it's about expressing some ideas, some values, some things to Hashem, and acting out in a very specific way, then unless you have it in mind, says the Prima Gadim, it's very possible that a person wouldn't be yotzei because mitzvos, tzrichos, kavana. A very brilliant suggestion by Rav Avram Gurvitz, although I'm not sure if he plugs it in at the end to the Prima Gadim, but he certainly leads us most of the way there, that if the idea of the Suda of Purim, of the meal of Purim, is not simply eating, but rather this idea of living out the Nes, so then you can understand a little bit better why you would need to intend that. You need to have that in mind. You wouldn't be able to just go through that absentmindedly. You'd actually have to have your head on straight in order to mekayim that mitzvah of Sudas Purim. When it comes to drinking wine in general, or when it comes to, you know, Sudas of Yom Tov in general, so we make a Kiddush before, and we don't do this in Purim, but on Yom Tov we say, Asher Bachar Avanu Mikol Am, V'Ravmanu Mikol Hashon, V'Kiddushanu B'Mitzvasav, we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated us from all the other nations of the world. Why do we say that specifically when it comes to Suda of Yom Tov? Why don't we say that when we put on tefillin, when we light the Shabbos candles, Asher Bachar Avanu Mikol Am, V'Ravmanu Mikol Hashon, the Goyim don't light candles either, the Goyim don't light menorah. Why do we do it specifically in the case of Suda's Yom Tov? So Rabbi Yankel Galinsky was a magid in Eretz Yisrael post-war for a while. So he explains very simply but very, very profoundly that the Goyim have holidays and the Jews have holidays and the Goyim have parties and the Jews have parties and the Goyim drink and the Jews drink and the Goyim commemorate and the Jews commemorate. We all do similar actions. We all do similar things, and a lot of times that involves eating and it involves gashmias, it involves materialism, it involves drinking wine, it involves celebrating in that physical way. But it's in that context that we have to stand apart. It's in that context we have to say that we're doing those celebratory acts. We're drinking the wine, we're eating the meat, but we're doing it in such a way that it's actually lofty. It's actually something which is a mitzvah. It's actually something which is holy, which is kadosh, and it's something which is separate and distinct from the rest of the world. The Gemara in Megillah on Daf Yud Beis picks up on the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Kitov lev." We mentioned it before on the source sheet. "Kitov lev hamelech b'yayin." On the seventh day of that grand party that Achashverosh threw, he summons Vashti. He was kitov lev hamelech b'yayin. So the Gemara there comments that the Jewish people open up their Sudas Shabbos and their Sudas Yontif with Devar Torah and Zmiros and Kedusha. That's how we have a Suda. And Achashverosh does this at his Suda, a disgusting act of priests at his Suda. So the Medrash in Esther Rabbah says that that's why the pasuk says, Ki Tov Lev HaMelech B'Yayin. That way you think of it as the Tov Lev means a person's happy, they're fulfilled, they feel very good. The pasuk doesn't say Tov Lev HaMelech B'Yayin, that Achashverosh was happy, was feeling good. Ki Tov Lev. It seemed like simcha. It seemed like it was good. It seemed like it was pure, but there was no simcha. There was no purity. There was no goodness in that happiness. It was drunkenness. It was disgusting. It was preachless. It was terrible. What we're supposed to have is we're supposed to have tov lev, mishta tamid. We're supposed to have a sense of tov lev through the mishta that we perform. True, we're going to drink the same wine, and we're going to eat the same meat, and we're going to joy and jump and dance and sing the same ways, but those physical acts of celebration have to be done in such a way that it's a romanu mikolam, that we're different, that we're distinct, that we're separate from the rest of the world. We know how to celebrate. We know how to use our gashmias in the proper way. There's no, even though we don't have a kiddush, but there's no yontif where this is a more necessary message than Purim itself. That whether, again, it's not really specifically about getting drunk. This is about all of the mishloach manos and the dressing up and the honestly, the spending of money on the mishloach manos, all the things we do to make it beautiful, which we should do. We have to make sure we're doing that with our heads on. We have to make sure we're doing it for the right reasons. So first of all, it has to be, like we said before, that the Mishloach Manos, and the Matanas Lavionim, and the Kriyas Megillah, and the Sudas Purim, they're all in the context of saying we're trying to be Hayam Me'ilu Nizkar Menasim, that we're remembering, commemorating the days of Purim through the enactment of the Purim story and through living out the mitzvot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to do to live out that Purim story. But then also we have to be, you know, Romanu. We have to be Kiddushanu. We have to be Bacharbanu. We have to show that we're distinct, we're separate, we're different. We don't act in a frivolous and disgusting manner when we're involved in Gashmias. We act like a B'nai Adam. We act like B'nai Yisrael. We act like a B'nai and B'nos Yisrael, that we're from, we're holy, we're Kadosh, we're Tahor, even and specifically when we're Tov Lev, when we're excited, when we're happy, when we're enjoying ourselves. So I give us a bracha. We should enjoy a Purim. It's a difficult Purim to enjoy with everything going on in Eretz Yisrael. But we have to be mezgaber and enjoy to the best degree that we can the yontif of Purim. And when we do so, we should do so in a way that shows our kedusha, our tahara, and helps us live out the message of Purim, so that b'siyat d'shmaya should bring, hopefully very soon, another Nesa Purim in our time, Mirtzah Hashem. Okay, everyone have a wonderful night.